Hi, everybody. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show, and we are the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. We have Dr. Catherine Albrecht with us as our special guest, and we've had her on a couple times before, actually going back about a dozen years. Can you believe that long? When she was doing spy chips and all that great stuff. Well, we're going to talk about Epstein today, and in a different light than what I've been covering in relationship to Pam Bondi and her scandals. I think her removal as AG is imminent, but we're going to go in a different direction with Catherine. We're going to focus on other areas of influence from Epstein. Before we do, I need to let you know we're coming to you live from the Noble Gold Studios. And Noble Gold, well, let me put it this way. BlackRock, Blackstone in trouble, that means the banks are in trouble. And that means that they can take your money, Dodd-Frank 2010, UCC code section 8. Don't have your retirement in the bank ever, never, never. Noble Gold can put it under your control and back it with precious metals. An appreciating asset, not a depreciating asset. It's easy. I've been a customer for almost 9 years. Been an advertiser for 10. Took me a year to wake up. Don't take that long. I don't think you have that long. Call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. And they are the only sponsor for this interview with Dr. Albrecht. Catherine, it's so good to have you back on. You've been the source of some good shows we've done in the past, and my audience loves you. They really respect your opinion. And I should mention, she's a Harvard-educated psychologist, PhD. So she comes to us with really, really good credentials. And we're going to talk about Epstein. And I'm going to leave the starting point up to you, where you'd like to come in on this.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, Dave, thank you so much for having me back. Hello to all the listeners and viewers. It's just delightful to be back. And I think we're going to break a story today on your program. The Epstein files are available on jmail.world. So if you, some AI enthusiasts have created a website which replicates the Gmail account of Jeffrey Epstein. And they have also brought in all of the email from his Yahoo account. And as you know, I am the co-founder of StartMail, right here in my background, startmail.com, which is the email program that I helped to create back in 2012 to encrypt email and make it private so that it could not be obtained by others. And what is shocking about the Epstein story is that Jeffrey Epstein, with all of his criminal activity, all of his connections to the top security people in the world and top world leaders, was doing all of his nefarious communications through Gmail. Now, that blows my mind. For us today, it's a great thing that he did, that he was that dumb. But what it means is that Google, even if he were to have deleted emails, even if half the things in there, he said, oh, that I don't want that in my inbox. When the investigators went after his Gmail account, all of the email you ever write, send, or receive is saved. So whether you delete it or not, it just deletes your ability to see it, but it does not delete it from your account. And so Jeffrey Epstein did something, he did us all a tremendous favor, but it was something that I think we all need to learn from, because when you go onto jmail.world and you look at the amount of information that we can discern from Jeffrey Epstein between 2007 and 2019, it is a treasure trove, a goldmine of information about Jeffrey Epstein. Now, you can go to jmail.world, which, by the way, I said it was created by AI enthusiasts. That is true, because this is what AI excels at. It excels at going through your email. And in fact, the Gmail accounts today automatically are fed into AI, and so are Yahoo accounts. So the StartMail that I created way back in 2013, or helped to create, has never been more necessary than today. Regular people can get the kind of privacy that Jeffrey Epstein did not provide for himself. So if you go into the jmail.world emails, you can do a search. You could search for pizza. You could search for underage. You could search for a lot of terms in there that you could search for. And so what I wound up doing, because a lot of it is redacted, but a lot of it is not. The names of the people are not redacted unless they were victims. So in the Epstein email files, what you're able to find is a list of who he corresponded with. And you can look up, for example, island or flight or private jet, and you can find out who flew to Jeffrey Epstein's island, and you can read the emails between him, the people who flew there, and his personal assistant who was organizing and arranging these trips. The one that shocked me, and the one that I want to break on your show today, were the emails that he exchanged with academics. Now, you mentioned that I have a doctorate from Harvard in psychology. I also attended the MIT Media Lab. I was a student. Harvard students can cross-enroll at MIT. It's only a couple miles down the road. And so I took a lot of courses at the MIT Media Lab, which is the cutting-edge, state-of-the-art. Back then, it was the cutting edge with this new thing called the internet. They do a lot of technology research for big corporations, and they are on the cutting edge of the tech. What I discovered was that Jeffrey Epstein had found research that he found very interesting on the issue of deception, power, and control. And that research was being done by psychologists. It was being done by expert academics who were not writing about it from a position of wanting to wield control or deceive people, but were writing about it simply as interesting understanding of the psychology of how the brain works. Well, Jeffrey Epstein, because he had so much money, he reached out to these academics who had no idea who he was. And he said, "I'm interested in your work. I want to fund it." He provided over $850,000 to the MIT Media Lab to fund the researchers who were working on this. And he did it scandalously. He did not do it through the regular channels. He did not do it the proper way where he was supposed to go through the office that accepts those donations. He gave a lot of that money directly to those researchers. And the way I found this out is because he was talking to them about their research, but also then invited them to come to his island. And so they decided amongst themselves, this is how he always would operate. He would find one person and bring them into his orbit and then say, bring other people. Now, we know that he did this with his victims, his underage victims. He would say, I'll give you $300 if you bring more of your junior high or high school friends over here into my, web. I will pay you for bringing in other people. So his whole approach to wielding the power that he wielded is he gave people, he wined them, he dined them. I don't know if you've seen the photos of the inside of Epstein's home. By the way, on JWorld, jmail.world, at the bottom, there's a link where you can actually get into all of the photographs of the Epstein files as well. There's a little box down there in sort of Google Colors, and it will show you the drive. It will show you all the photos, and the photos are worth looking through. They're astonishing. And in fact, this is how I made this connection. I was going through the photos of his opulent homes, and we're talking, private helicopter pads and jets and homes in France and Manhattan and really expensive real estate. And on his island where they went through every room and took photos of everything, there's a chalkboard, a blackboard in one of the rooms there, very opulent room. And on it are written these in white chalk letters, the word deception and power. And I was like, what is this? So I actually did a search that I have not seen anyone else do in the Epstein files. You can do the search yourself and look for the word deception. And you will find it appears 1,200 times, the word deception. And as I drilled down further, that is where I began to see the link between all of the Harvard professors and all of the MIT professors. And so what they were trying to do, eventually they had to get together. Now, bear in mind, in Massachusetts, where MIT and Harvard are located, February is a pretty awful month. It's very cold and dreary. I live there. He offered to fly them to his tropical paradise in the middle of February to have a warm vacation and spend several days, quote, building a brain. And so during this time, I don't know what all they discussed because there's no record of that, because obviously they didn't need to email about what they talked about, but something happened during that time on the island that Jeffrey Epstein was picking the brains of the smartest people in the world, the academics, to better understand these things. Now, we know he had an interest in transhumanism. We know he had an interest in breeding programs, DNA and genetic programs. We know that he approached Virginia Giuffre, as well as others, and said, "I'd like you to have my children." And many of those girls who were there, unfortunately, against their intentions, wound up having children. We do not know what happened to those children. Some of them, so there are some tragic stories that you will find in there, references to in the Epstein files, of literally girls who were strangled during rough sex and accidentally died being buried on the New Mexico ranch out in the desert. So we're seeing these stories. We're hearing these things coming in. We don't. One of the girls was told that if she revealed what was happening to her, that she would wind up as fertilizer out in the golf course like all those other blinks. So these girls knew that they were at his mercy, that he would kill them and their families, or someone would kill them and their families. And so they kept their mouths shut. But the big question, I think, arises is, what was Jeffrey Epstein doing in terms of manipulating the human mind, manipulating potentially DNA, manipulating in a transhumanist way to try to create sort of a master race of whoever he was trying to create? Now, he was, bear in mind, we've got some of the most powerful men in the world involved in this, who had the money, who had the resources, who had the interest. The part for me, as someone who has a doctorate from Harvard and spent a lot of time at the MIT Media Lab, where this scandalous money changed hands, the part for me that is so abhorrent is that people, when I received my doctorate in psychology, I went into it with the idea of the betterment of humanity. I want to learn these things so that I can contribute. The Mark Zuckerberg has been involved in a class action lawsuit in Los Angeles. I don't know if it's class action, but he is being sued by a 20-year-old woman who says that he destroyed her life through addiction, and that she lost her whole adolescence, her whole childhood growing up, to addiction to Facebook and media, social media. And what's interesting in that case is that the discovery process, when there is a lawsuit, there the plaintiff is allowed to demand certain records and files from the person they're suing. And Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook have had to turn in huge amounts of documentation that shows that they intentionally built addictive properties into their products, that this was not a mistake. It wasn't accidental, that it was just, as he likes to claim, "My product is so valuable that people need to use it, and they use it all the time because of how great it is." Well, the reality is he built it in. And tying this back to the research at Epstein and the research of these psychologists, the video game industry, Facebook, all of these addictive social media and screen-based programs that have gotten people so sucked in, have utilized the research done by psychologists specializing in addiction. And so they took decades worth of research as to how to set people free from addiction to opiates, set people free from addiction to gambling and other things. And they took that research and picked the brains of those researchers, and then took the insights they had to do the opposite and figure out how to build addictive properties into their products. And so this is happening everywhere. So a lot of the evil, Dave, that you see today going on in the world is evil that is preying upon or taking advantage of or utilizing the insights of modern science. So we did not have an understanding of the brain and of addiction back in the 1800s. We didn't have that back in the 1940s, but we have it today in spades. So they even have MRI machines, like, talk about how far this has gone, using science to manipulate people. The companies that do advertising have actually put people into MRI machines and shown them advertisements. And get this, in the MRI machine, they can detect what part of the brain is activating at any given moment. And they want advertisements that activate the action part of your brain, the thing that's actually going to make you open your wallet, pull out your credit card, and make a payment. So they want to activate that part of the brain. But now here's the catch. They also want to find the ads that activate that part of the brain without activating the conscious awareness in the brain. So what they're specifically looking for, because if you activate my open my wallet and spend money part of my brain, but my other part of my brain is going, yeah, but you're overdrawn on your credit card, or yeah, but you need to make a payment on this or that or the other, then your conscious part will override that instant activity. So they have actually used MRI machines in order to specifically find ads. Rule out 99 out of 100 ads. Find the one that gets you to spend money without even activating your conscious awareness. So this is the degree, these MRI machines, all of this research is being used in such a horrific way because they can. And Epstein was right at the cutting edge of it.
Yeah, I want to go back to some of the properties here. In my training to be a psychologist, when I looked at guided imagery with sports applications, we learned about perceptual defense. You can't use basically hypnotic techniques to make people act against their will unless you can find a way through the unconscious to change the scenario to bypass perceptual defense. Is that what you're saying they've learned how to bypass?
Yeah, pretty much. So this is called neuromarketing. You can look it up.
Yeah, I'm
Neuromarketing
familiar
is
with
this
it.
growing field that not only uses MRI machines and the deep things that are happening in the brain that people are not even aware of, but it looks at minute movements of the eye, of focus, of even the angle that your head is
Oh.
at. It looks at all of these details in order to figure out how to best get people to act and be least likely to resist, or least able to, or aware of the need to resist your manipulation of them. And so Jeffrey Epstein was looking at this in terms of deceiving people and in terms of the social power that arises from deceiving people. So he was a master at it, clearly. He
Is it
had.
like video games where they excite dopamine and serotonin, neurotransmitters?
Well, that's part of it, but this was more about activities. I think what Jeffrey Epstein was more interested in was what words do you speak? What clothes do you wear? How do you respond when people say one certain thing? What is the proper way to respond to maintain a deception? If they start figuring out the deception, what can you do to maneuver them back into a deceived place? This was very detailed. Now, Jeffrey Epstein, one of the things you'll notice if you go into Jeffrey Epstein's Gmail account at jmail.world, I've got a cat meowing here. One of the things you will notice in there is that Jeffrey Epstein was a notoriously bad speller. His emails are filled with typos, misspellings. In fact, it's one of the reasons it's a little hard to search his email, because if you search for a name, you will find some of them where he spelled it right, but you'll miss all the ones where he did his own creative misspelling. And the same is true for many, many words. So Jeffrey Epstein gave off sort of an air of being not a very smart guy because of his horrific email. And if you look in there, you'll see it's just it's half of it, you can't even understand what he's saying. It's so poorly written. But when he talked to these academics, you see a whole other side of him come out that was very intelligent and very much focused on this research he was trying to get to. So now I have to say, in the defense of these academics, they had no idea what they were dealing with. But once they got sucked in, one of them actually later wrote to him and talked about orgies on the island and talked about wanting to return and talked about so these academic, now think about this. If you're an academic and kind of a nerd, and you're at Harvard or you're at MIT and you're focused on this very esoteric, narrow little area of research that most people don't even know or care about, and now a billionaire contacts you and says, I want to fund your research, then what is it that that person would want to talk to more than anything in the world, or talk about more than anything in the world? They would want to talk about their research, that particular area of interest. So he was able to manipulate, and he did this to everybody, but with the academics specifically, he was able to express enough interest in them and build them up. You know, you're the person at the top of this. You are the expert. I want to fund you. You're doing groundbreaking research. And then those, you know, I have to say, kind of socially, in many cases, not, you know, these weren't people jet setting around on islands. These were academics, you know, buried in their books. And now suddenly a billionaire says, come fly on my private jet and fly to my island and be in this paradise with marble staircases and fountains and beautiful girls everywhere and things you've never imagined in your life. And you are now in my world. And all of them had their heads turned, as would any of us, as would anybody. If someone said that, you'd go, wow, I hit the jackpot. I'm in golden. But then the nastiness began. So what Epstein was doing is when he would bring these people out there, he would praise their research. He would connect them with other researchers in their field. So they felt very much at home and very safe there, because clearly this is an academic conference of my peers. And then he would do an exquisite meal. He would take them out in his helicopter. He'd do all these things. And at the end, he would say, and I have a private spa and you can get a massage. And it was just one more of the many, many things being offered to them. And so they went into the private spa to get a massage. As, you know, maybe I would go for a manicure or something. And it was at that point that these girls had been coerced into turning that massage into something more. And all of that, as far as we know, was filmed through secret cameras. I do not believe that Epstein needed to use that footage at all against these people, but he had it in his back pocket in case they ever wanted to, I don't know, maybe blow the whistle on what he was doing on his island, right? So I don't think he was blackmailing most of these world leaders. I think they were all part of what he was doing. But if anyone ever wanted to come forward and call the authorities or report what was happening, then that footage would be enough to absolutely stop that in just, you know, nip it in the bud. So I think that's why he did that, the thing that he did. And now these academics found themselves in a position where they're traveling without their spouses, they're on this island, and one thing's led to another, and now here they are, and now they're drawn into his circle. And so, and then the money keeps flowing, you know, $100,000 for your research lab, $100,000 for your next study. And that's how he did not just academics, that's how he got everybody into his circle. And it's horrifying.
That is just an amazing account. You know, I wonder if the origin of this, I've interviewed Nick Bryan a number of times, and going back to the Franklin scandal, getting people in compromised positions, like people who have been sworn in Congress, they go to a party, they're filmed in compromising positions, so it looks they may not have done anything wrong at all, then choose to blackmail their vote down the road. And I've interviewed Nick on that, and it seems like this is kind of an outgrowth of that model. What year do you estimate that Epstein Island became a thing?
You know, it's hard to tell. Back in 2009, I think he registered the email address. This was a Yahoo address related to the island. So I don't know what year he bought the island, but I know that island had been in operation for quite some time. And even with the academics, he had his secretary reach out to them and say, Mr. Epstein can travel to Cambridge, you know, Massachusetts, where these universities are located, or you could visit, you know, we could do this conference at his townhouse in Manhattan, or you can fly to his private island. And of course, it's February in the middle of, you know, New England, and it's cold, and they're all like, private island, please. Yes, yes. And that's how he got them there. So it wasn't come on the Lolita Express and come have, you know, orgies on my island. It was, I want to meet with you about your research. This is about you and your research. And here are the places that I can support you in your research. And then he lured them to the island, basically, because who wouldn't be lured if you had a choice of meeting, you know, at MIT in the snow or flying on a private jet to a, you know, tropical island? You know, so he got them in. The other thing that, and this is my own conjecture about how he got his funding. So the one thing that has just not been discussed, and I think there's a reason why nobody's pursuing this, but the one thing that really hasn't gotten much discussion is, where did he get all the money? You do not have a house in Paris, a house in London, a house in Manhattan, you know, one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in Manhattan, and own an entire island, plus a jet, plus every other thing. I mean, he was giving away like $35,000 Rolexes, just tossing them left and right. You don't get that kind of money through legitimate means. There's just no way. And no amount, and we don't have a record of him being a high rolling stockbroker or money manager. We don't have any record of him doing anything like that. This money just kind of existed. And he had all of his money in offshore accounts that we don't have access to. The Justice Department has not gotten them, whether they could or couldn't, or whether they did and just aren't telling us. We don't know. But somehow he had an incredible amount of money, and that money was going not to himself. It was going to the things that would lure people in. And they're kind of one in the same, you know, having a private jet, having an island. But it almost seems as though the money was very specifically designated to be bait to bring people in. So the.
I want to go back to the academics for a second because I'm looking at motivation. Was he hooking these people in from academia to do private research in ways he could use to manipulate down the road, or were there other purposes?
I think he wanted to be. I think he, in his mind, was a self-styled revolutionary who was going to manipulate the whole world to his design. You know, kind of like, almost like, you know, in the old cartoons, I'm going to rule the world with my finger on the button. I think Jeffrey Epstein really saw himself as that. And the people he had in his orbit were the people who do rule the world. And so for him to be ruling them gave him a sense of being the person at the top of the top of the top. And
What about
so I
connection to
think,
intel agencies? Did you find anything with that?
you know, I didn't find much. What I did find, and this is just because of my interest in email and privacy, I found that Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel
Yes.
and their head of the military, and a guy who certainly should have known better, he also had a Gmail account. I think it was like ehud10@gmail.com that he was writing to Epstein through. This is a guy who, I mean, clearly these guys knew the risks of using a Gmail account, and yet anyone using a Gmail account, and I'll say this to all of your viewers and listeners as well, anyone using Gmail or Yahoo is already having the equivalent of jmail.world right sitting out there for anyone to peruse who's able to get access to it. And what we're seeing now is that when you get access to it, it's pretty damaging. So Ehud Barak doing that is nuts. As far as the actual intelligence part, you got to realize, Dave, there are so many emails in there. There's so much content. This is why story after story after story keeps coming out on, we found these in the Epstein files. Well, a big part of the Epstein files are these emails. And you have to kind of pick your, you have to kind of pick the thing you're interested in. So if you're interested in intelligence, then find some words related to that. Poke through jmail.world and you will probably find some smoking guns in there. For me, I when I looked through the photos and I saw that picture of deception, that just got me going, what in the world? Why would you put the word deception on a whiteboard? Why would you on a blackboard? Why who? So I think that meeting of those academics took place in that room. That's my guess. And that one of those academics was up there writing those words on there. And so that's the thread. So what you do when you're looking at the Epstein files, you're reading along and then you find something like that. And then you just pull the thread and then the whole sweater begins to unravel and then you find something. And all of the stories that are out there, the people who have had to step down, the people who have, you know, this has made big changes in, you know, high places where many people have had to either resign or be fired or apologize or, you know, be publicly exposed. So for me, it was that academic part. I was very interested. Who are these people? What did they study? And what did they study in relation to what he would have wanted to know? And again, it's all about psychological manipulation. How can you deceive people and get power over them? That's what he was all about.
You know, the origin of this work, and I keep flashing back to this, so I've got to mention it. John Watson, the father of modern advertising on Wall Street. You know, he was fired from, I believe it was Princeton. He had an affair when he's married. He had an affair with a gal who was the daughter of the president, and that killed his academic career. But he goes to Wall Street and makes all this money on advertising. And he used, you know, the first one to really use positive reinforcement in commercials and so forth. And that's to me where it goes. But here's what I've been told, and I don't know if you've come across this or not. I've been told that most of what Epstein does is in the financial empire, and that the sex blackmail, so forth, and sexual manipulation of people came as a result of getting people to bend to the will of financial desires like currency manipulation and things like that. Have you come across that?
Here's my, this is just my working hypothesis, Dave. I don't think Epstein had the brains, honestly, the intelligence to do something on that level. I think that Jeffrey Epstein was a very useful idiot for somebody. And let me tell you why I think that. We don't know where his money came from, but there was a lot of it. And that money was used to draw powerful people into his orbit so that they could be in his orbit, but also so that compromising information, videos, tapes could be made of them. For Jeffrey Epstein himself, he very much enjoyed having all of those victims at his disposal. For Jeffrey Epstein himself, he very much enjoyed the accoutrements of all of this money and all of these homes. But I don't think he was the one, the mastermind behind the decision to bring powerful people into his orbit where they could be blackmailed or compromised. I believe that someone, whether this is Russia, whether this is Israel, whether this is the Rothschilds, I don't know, somebody who is invisible and nameless, I believe has used Jeffrey Epstein, gave him all of this to create bait, and then used a man who was a consummate manipulator, because he really was a consummate manipulator who knew how to bring people into his orbit. That was, if Jeffrey Epstein had one skill, that would be the skill. Knowing how to find a single person and get that person to reach out to all of their influential conflict con contacts and bring them in. And then once they were brought in, they were wowed by the money, the opulence, and Jeffrey Epstein threw that money around like crazy, bought people cars. He did such things you wouldn't normally do unless you were trying to lure people in and then keep them there. And then once he lured them in, he did the same thing he did to the academics. We have a spa. You can go get a manicure. You can get a facial, get your haircut, get a shave, get a pedicure, whatever you want. And you can get a massage too. And that is how it wasn't that he said, come on to my Lolita Island. Woo-hoo-hoo. It was that he was able to seem like a very respectable business person who everyone was impressed by because of all his money and connections. He had pictures of world leaders all over his walls. And so people would come there believing that they had hit the jackpot and were now in the elite. And then he would get this compromising information. I don't believe that that compromising information was ever used by Jeffrey Epstein. I believe that it was obtained by whoever was giving him the money. Whoever was giving him the money would say, hey, Jeffrey, remember when you so and so? I need the tapes. I need the evidence. And then whoever that is that was funding him was the one who would then say, we got dirt on you. You do what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I totally agree with everything you're saying, but there's one thing that I want to interject here. And I don't know how much this is speculation. I think there's some basis to it. I know there's basis on what I'm going to tell you. Ghislaine Maxwell, her father, Robert Maxwell, Mossad, one of the founders of the Mossad. And I'm wondering if she wasn't really the brains, and taking orders to give to Epstein, and he follows the
Wouldn't that make
orders.
sense? Wouldn't
Yeah,
that
and
make
that's
sense?
kind of where I think this whole thing goes. Because you hear that this goes back to Israel. I think that's an overgeneralization, but I think there's an Israeli connection there through Maxwell and her father.
So someone benefited. So think about this. If you're the shadowy elite, the banking, people who run the country, who pull the puppet strings, you do not want to deal directly with all of the world leaders and all of the influential people that you want to be able to control. You want a useful guy like Epstein in the middle, because what Epstein did for them was bring the people in, but also have the crime ready to be committed by the people you brought in so that you would have the evidence in hand. So there's a reason why this was a combination of both underage girls, because had he had over 18 girls, then it might have been compromising with their wives, but it wouldn't have been compromising with them being removed from public office potentially. It probably wouldn't have looked good, but it wouldn't have looked that bad. So
Yeah.
he had to have, for this whole scheme to work, he had to have illegal activity that could be filmed, that could be easily recognized, because a lot of illegal activity is complicated and involves paperwork and who knows what. This was visible illegal activity that was unmistakable and was, because of the environment of the island, was as natural as breathing on that island. And it seemed as though all of these girls were willing participants. It seemed as though this was just another perk of being part in
Sure.
being in his orbit. And the combination had to have both illegal, a number of girls who were illegal and underage, combined with the extravagance and the generosity and the skill that Jeffrey Epstein had. There's a woman named Conchita Sarnoff who wrote a book called Trafficked. She, in 20, I think 2010, it was back during his original arrest. Conchita Sarnoff is fascinating, and you should get her on your show. She's an amazing, interesting person. Conchita Sarnoff was married to David Sarnoff, who was one of the key guys at NBC. And she met Jeffrey Epstein, and he, because this is what he's good at, he figured out the Sarnoff name, figured out that she was connected with NBC, and then befriended her in order, like he always did, to bring him into the orbit, because he didn't have television network people in his orbit yet. And he wanted to, so he befriended Conchita. Now, little did he know that Conchita Sarnoff was actually researching child trafficking and founding an organization to stop child sex trafficking. Neither of them knew this about the other. So Conchita Sarnoff was in correspondence with Jeffrey Epstein, and then someone told her, "Hey, have you heard your guy, your friend, just got arrested for child sex trafficking?" And so that was when Conchita, now he didn't know, she had a couple of conversations with him from when he was in jail. She literally is the only person I think who interviewed him in jail. She didn't really interview him. He thought she was just chatting, and she recorded those interviews with him at that time. And it has become this extraordinary book about Jeffrey Epstein. I think that's based on his early activities. That's one of the best books you can read on this, is the book
What's the name of
Trafficked.
the book again?
It's called Trafficked.
Okay. That's an amazing. So I was not aware of this, and thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Yeah,
You know,
fascinating. And she knows a
something.
lot.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, she knows a lot, and she's such a great example. I think it was through her that I began to figure it out that that's what he did. He would find you, he'd meet you, he'd go, "What do you do?" And the minute he would kind of fill you out, "Do you have any connections? Is there anything about you that I can use? Do you know any people? Are you related to any people?" And if you weren't, he'd just discard you. But if you were, then he would start the whole act, the whole, wining and dining and giving you gifts and all of that in order to bring the other people in. Yeah.
You know, I have, you've made me maybe connect a dot here, and I might be out in left field on this, but Sam Bankman-Fried, he had that fraudulent crypto organization, and almost
Right.
all of the people were either celebrities or Democrats. And that really jumped out at me as I was looking who was involved in this, and they all made money and they didn't have to pay any of it back. And I'm looking at the Epstein situation, and I don't have any data. But what keeps surfacing, and it might be a result of the liberal media slanting it, but what keeps surfacing is more Republicans than Democrats. So I wonder if they're really from the same mode, just
He didn't
different ways
care.
of entrapping people.
He didn't care. He had Noam Chomsky there.
No,
Yeah, I
okay. All
mean,
right. That's
yeah,
a good
he.
point. And you know, of course, President Trump is implicated in this, and I don't know at what length. Have you looked at that at all with Donald Trump?
It's what I've seen turned my stomach so much I stopped looking. Honestly, it was
I understand.
the things about that I've encountered about Donald Trump and the aspect of this that I've had to just say I can't go there is the degree to which these girls were harmed and abused. It is inconceivable. It's really awful when you understand that this whole thing that had been set up depended upon preying upon and destroying the lives of so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young women. And here's the thing that makes it so disgusting. If he could get a 12 or a 13-year-old in there, then that would be so incriminating. versus a 17-year-old. So he wanted young, he wanted innocent, he
Because it
wanted
looks worse. Yeah, I agree.
scandalous
I agree.
because it looked worse. And the stories these girls tell in Trafficked, you'll hear it's just awful. But the stories and the experiences these girls had, and the other part nobody talks about today because we live in an era of abortion and birth control. These were young girls who were raped as virgins. There were pregnancies on that island, and lots of them. There were pregnancies not just on the island, but in New Mexico, in Manhattan. There were pregnancies galore. And one of the things he had on the island was a medical, the hospital, a facility, a clinic. And we don't have evidence of abortion equipment being there, but there's just absolutely no question. There are girls who tell of the abortions. One girl tells of actually giving birth. She was allowed 5 hours with her baby before her baby was killed.
Yeah.
So the other side to this is that it's not just sexual violation, it's actual murder. There's actually babies involved, new lives involved. This goes so deep. And I think that the demonic element of it, truly the evil in it, I think is where Jeffrey Epstein started getting all tangled up with the transhumanism and how can we modify DNA in babies. And it just is sick
I've
to the
heard this,
core.
I've heard this from some contacts about the transhumanism experiments. Also, out of the same sources, I'm hearing about cannibalism of the young that were born. Do you know anything about that?
Well, yeah, because the people, I mean, do I know that it actually happened? I know that there are people who have reported it happened. The person who came off the boat screaming and went to the police screaming about the cannibalism that was taking place among the elite, that they were eating babies and they got off the boat screaming. This think about these elite. They have money. The rest, most of us are working. You and I, we wake up in the morning because something motivates us. We want to, I have a daily radio show. You have this program. We want to get the word out. We care about what we do, and it's gratifying. There's something really, really good and really wholesome, and it feeds the spirit, it feeds the soul to get up and work towards things. But if you have all the money in the world, there's nothing to work towards. There's really nothing. It's like the people who view pornography, it gets worse and worse until people begin, it no longer has a thrill anymore. And then they find themselves in really sick and twisted, corrupt, awful, depraved,
Is
fetish
it, you think
stuff.
it's a progressive addiction, in other words?
Yeah, well, what I think happens is that nothing really fires you up anymore because you could twist your little finger and have an island. You could move your little finger and have someone fired or killed. You could do anything you want because you have that degree of power. And then what remains other than to transgress taboos? And so I think the same way that pornography leads to transgressing taboos, I think that this amount of power leads to the same place. Oh yeah, killing someone, that I've done that, but I haven't eaten anyone. I haven't the most depraved things that are taboo is what begins to be the line that they want to cross just to feel anything, just to feel alive. And I think that's why we're hearing reports of eating feces and hearing reports of eating baby, the kinds of things that these people do. They're the things you do once you've already done everything else.
Demonic.
Yeah, and I truly believe that it is absolutely demonic. And the interconnection between this and artificial intelligence, the fact that a lot of the researchers that he was working with, the fact that he wanted to build an artificial brain, it all ties in, and it is all part of a dark cabal. The research I've been doing lately, this is far afield, maybe we'll do another show on it, but I have been doing research on the fact that religion is back. In fact, I have a website up, religionisback.com. It's in progress, but as an academic, I also sit on the board of directors for community mental health in my county. So we are the public mental health authority. I'm on the board. And I have been doing research and discovered that none of us know that there are huge conferences happening at Harvard with the APA, with the American Psychiatric Association, to talk about the importance of religion and spirituality in mental health. And not only mental health, physical health. Medical programs all over the country are reintroducing religion. So I just attended on Thursday and Friday 14 hours of a conference at Harvard in their religion and spirituality program. And 20 different speakers spoke to us about the need to reintroduce religion back into society, back into mental health care specifically.
Is it for manipulation or for
Nope.
welfare?
Nope, this is for welfare. This is so it's a little bit of an aside, but I think it's relevant. Back in the early 1900s, Sigmund Freud was the reason we got rid of religion in society overall. It's the reason we're living in the world we're living in now. Sigmund Freud was an atheist. He was Jewish and he hated God with a passion, and he made it his life's work to eradicate God from the public sphere. He said, and wrote books on this, that the cause of human suffering, the cause of mental illness, was religion. And once we eradicated it, we would have a truly modern scientific society. And in addition to that, he also, if you think back to the Oedipus complex and the Electra complex, all the stuff we learned
Sure.
about in Psych 101, that all of that was, think about what it did. It said that sexuality, the sex drive, is what makes a person. It is what drives everything we do. Every subconscious thought we have, it drives relationships between children and their parents. It drives, so he created this very twisted, very perverse, very demonic view of human beings, that we needed to eradicate God completely because God's not there, and really the only thing that is there is sex. That's it. That and mental illness. And so for the entire 20th century, we labored under that false perception that God needed to be eradicated. And you and I, of course, have both grown up in a world where you couldn't say you were a Christian. You couldn't say you believed in God. You couldn't, that doesn't belong here. Well, this is a sea change that the likes of which I've never seen. I think the Lord is doing it right now at this time we're living in, because the darkness has gone to a certain point and now God is pouring out his spirit, really. This information about reintroducing religion, there were chaplains, there was gospel music at Harvard, at a conference at Harvard, talking about reintroducing all of this and the importance of bringing it back. So only the academics so far are aware of it. I want the public to become aware of it, that it is now hip and cool to have a religion again. They found that being religious gives you a six times less likely, lower likelihood of suicide. It
Agree.
improves every mental health measure they look at, from depression to OCD to bipolar to schizophrenia, you name it. Having a religion is r almost a requirement for mental health. It's extraordinary, having a belief system. And the fact that we systematically stamped it out is the reason you look around. You see broken families, you see drug addiction, you see people acting wild and crazy and not having a clue. Society falling apart. Those things all are go hand in hand with eliminating a moral core to our country. And so in fact, after we finish this interview, I'm going to sit down with my 14 hours of transcripts from that event, and I'm going to try to summarize it down to about 10 minutes worth of key content that I want to share. And I'd be happy to send it to you when I do that.
Oh, please do. Yes.
Yeah, I want to just try to distill it down, because I thought when I wanted to look into this topic, I thought I would need to fill a teacup from like a dripping faucet. Instead, I'm filling a teacup from a fire hose from Niagara Falls. The amount of documentation, the amount of proof, there are tens of thousands of articles on this. And this all got started because about 15 years ago, they did, so let me back up. There's a guy named Dr. Harold Koenig at Duke University in North Carolina. He has spent 30 years of his career, maybe 40, trying to open up mental health to religion. And he met all kinds of resistance, as you can imagine. But about 15, 20 years ago, a colleague of his did an MRI brain study, not neuromarketing, but actually comparing the brains of people who are religious and believe in God and pray and attend church, and people who are not. And what they found were structural differences in the anatomical structure of the brain that were so significant and so profound
In what
that the
areas?
brains,
What areas of the brain?
I'd have to go back and find, it's like the cortical thickness of certain cortical portions of the lining.
I
So
would
I'd have to go
imagine the
back and
limbic
find, but
system's involved in the eye and
I think this was
judgment.
not actually the limbic system. So
Really?
I'd have to send it to you. Yeah, these were less cognitive differences than they were anatomical differences.
Maybe dormant areas of the brain that get excited by
So I
spirituality.
can send you, I've this is fascinating research, but that is what opened the door, were the structural differences in the brain. And that's what got researchers starting to look at some of these other things. Let's compare them on depression. Let's compare them on suicide. Let's compare them on substance abuse. Let's
True.
compare them on PTSD. And in every single comparison they did, they found vast, not just slight differences, but vast differences. And
I'm
religion
familiar
now
with
is
the,
being, yeah.
yeah, I'm familiar with the social psychology research on this. That's why I'm interested to see what you found about the differences in the brain. Let me share something with you that I've been talking to pastors about, Christian pastors. I've even spoken on this at a Christian conference. Genesis 6, verse 4, and talk about the fallen angels, the intermarriage with earth women. And then it says, and they were there afterward. Well, they would be the fallen angels. And afterward, well, the next scripture is about the flood. And so I'm going to tell you where my mind goes on this. And I don't have, it's more of a working hypothesis, but I'm wondering if that DNA didn't survive to today. And some of these world leaders through history are these kinds of creatures that have these tendencies, whether they're hybrids or purebreds, I don't know. But I'm looking at an explanation for the extreme evil. And
So,
then we keep getting the reintroduction of like Baal, Asherah, and Moloch. The ancient Jews had it. We have it today. Just throwing that out for your edification, because I just wonder if there's not something genetic about what we're facing.
I have to apologize. We have a connection that just got very fuzzy as you began discussing the Nephilim.
Oh
So
my
the
gosh, you
timing
gotta
on
be
that
kidding.
was,
How coincidental, huh?
yeah, our connection still is fuzzy enough that I'm struggling to make out what you're saying. So,
Can you hear me now?
no, I don't
Wow.
know if that's on your end or my end or Zoom or what happened, but
This is
I can hear you're speaking, but I can't tell what you're saying, unfortunately. Yeah.
I'm so
And by
sorry.
the way, if you can hear me, I want to say something. This has happened to
I
me.
can hear you.
Yeah. This experience of when very specific demonic things are being discussed, that something goes wrong has happened to me. I was actually on my live radio program and I was talking about how artificial intelligence is afflicting people's minds. And as I was speaking, my mind was afflicted to the point where I could not complete a sentence. And I had to end my show prematurely. And as soon as I ended my show, I could talk perfectly normally. I went to the emergency room. They ran a battery of tests. There was not one single thing wrong with me. They could find no explanation or reason for it. And I actually have that recording of that show. You can hear me perfectly normal throughout the show. I get to about 43, for about 40 minutes into the show. I begin talking about people's brains being afflicted by demons. And I cannot speak. I end my show and then I'm fine. So I coincidence, I suppose, but I think it's very interesting that I cannot hear you. So, yeah. Okay,
Not yet,
perfect.
yeah, okay, but
Got it.
right here, follow you.
Okay,
How do we
so I
follow
do
you?
a daily radio program Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern. It is on YouTube. I live stream it on YouTube. It is also available on my website at katherine-albrecht.com. I also have a website opposing artificial intelligence and listing all of its crimes at realisgood.org because I'm a big believer in reality and a big opponent of AI. And religionisback.com is my in progress website where I'm putting together all of this spectacular research about the importance of religion. So please check it out. You can also message me if you have any questions at katherine-albrecht.com, and there's a wealth of information on there.
Okay.
Awesome.
We'll
All
send
right.
you
Well,
an email.
thank you. Thank you so
Okay.
much. It's been a delight being on your show. Much to talk about. Appreciate it. Thanks,
Ladies and
Dave.
gentlemen, I'm sorry you're not getting the dialogue between us here at the end, and I don't think this is an accident. But anyway, thank you for joining us, Catherine. I'll be in touch.
Thank you. All right. God bless you.